Play to Potential Podcast.
Welcome to the 12th conversation at the Play to Potential podcast series, where I talk to people from different walks of life on topics around leadership, transitions, and careers. I'm Deepak Jayaraman, the creator and curator of this series of conversations. My objective from this podcast series is to have learning conversations with a range of people and share those curated insights with you. This time, I'm talking to Atul Kasbekar, a highly accomplished photographer, producer of the movie Neerja, which recently won the National Award for the Best Feature Film in Hindi, and an entrepreneur who's launched several successful businesses, including celebrity management and corporate image management. The client list for his work includes the who's who in the corporate world and in Bollywood. What really intrigued me about Atul was the fact that he was a high-achieving student all the way in school and was studying chemical engineering in UDCT, arguably the best chemical engineering school in the country. But he had the audacity to drop out of there in a couple of years, pursue his passion, went to the US to pursue a course in photography, and today is a highly accomplished photographer and has gone on to do much more. In our conversation, Atul reflected on why he did what he did at various inflection points along the way and shared his insights around how he's managed to stay relevant over the years. Without further ado, over to the conversation. Atul, thank you so much for your time. Excited to be talking to you.
Pleasure to be here.
And in a way, given it's a day after Mother's Day, a good place to start might be to rewind the clock. One of the things I'm curious about is how much of who we are gets baked in early in our lives. So maybe if you could reflect on, let's say, the formative years of your life, first 10, 15 years, could you talk a little bit about what got formed then, which still forms a core part of who you are?
I actually had exceptional grades in school. I was in Campion and then in Jaihind. Yeah. And I think this is, we're talking now in the 70s and early 80s. So, you know, if you had the grades, it was generally assumed at that time that you'll become one of three, four professions, you know. And primarily with engineer, doctor, CA, yeah, chartered accountant, yeah, etc. So, you know, and I was exceptionally good at chemistry. I enjoyed that subject. Mm-hmm. My dad had a chemical factory. It almost seemed logical that I'd become a chemical engineer. Now, right. I had the grades to get into UDCT, which is now called the ICT. At that time, the University Department of Chemical Technology. And
possibly the best chemical degree in the country.
In the country by far. Rated, I think, in the top 10 in Asia as well.
Right.
And, you know, so it was just one of those things that you got into UDCT, everybody was like, oh my God, you got into UDCT. So, you know, but when I got there, I realized that chemical engineering had very little to do with pure chemistry, per se. Mm. You know, it had to do with, the chemical process was pretty much already known. You had to design equipment and, you know,
sure.
It was more physics, and physics I hated. So all of a sudden, I realized that I was quite easily going to be the worst chemical engineer known. Mm-hmm. And then when I checked a lot of the former grads, I found that very few of them were still doing chemical engineering. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out why one would spend 4 years doing something that eventually they're selling insurance or running some company that had absolutely nothing to do with chemistry, the chemical process, physics or engineering. They were in finance, or, you know, then
I'm a good example of an engineer turned something else.
So it seemed to me like a singularly useless waste of 4 years, you know. And so I started talking to people, and which is an interesting story.
This is during your engineering?
Yeah. So in the first year, I realized ki yaar ye main nahi kar sakta, you know, this I really should not do. And the process of speaking to, I'm giving you this little build up because then it becomes relevant to where my parents were in the context of this.
Sure.
So, you know, I realized that, so I spoke to a couple of people. One of them was Prahlad Kakkar. And he said a very interesting thing. He said, you know, 95% of humanity goes to work every day. And 5%, I'm sure he made that number up in his head, but it seems very accurate.
Right.
Yeah, you know. And he said, you know, 5% makes a living at what it enjoys.
And how did you get to him, out of curiosity?
I don't recall exactly. I think it was The former head of Air India was a family friend, and he worked, he headed the advertising of it. And, right. And then he said, why don't you meet this filmmaker, Karke, you know, so on. So Prahlad said, you just ask yourself, what is it that nobody needs to tell you to do, you know? And if you're doing that for, to make a living, then, you know, you're never really working. And you, there's no concept of, you're never getting up on a Monday morning and going to work, you know? Weekend comes, ho-hum, big deal. My, the rest of my week was also fun, you know? So you can, if you're going to work, I figure you can work 4, 6, 8, 10 hours a day, you know? Beyond that, the motivation has to be a passion. Otherwise, it, you know, it, it'll be work very soon. Yep. So I said, okay, nobody needs to tell me to take pictures. And I shot, it was a very serious hobby, and I took some rubbish photos of, you know, dogs and cats and horses and sunsets and my sister or whatever, you know, and, but I enjoyed that, you know, so I figured. And, so when I started talking to my parents, then we met a couple of people. I met Gautam, which is a very interesting story as to how I met Gautam Rajadaksh. But, when I spoke to my parents, I mean, they were freaking out because, and you can't blame them because, you know, from the background, my dad is the eldest of five brothers, and he has a master's in mathematics. The second one is architect, the third's a doctor, the fourth's a chemical engineer, and the fifth one is a chartered accountant.
What would be called respectable professions in the
world? Then? And, you know, so they were like, you want to be a photographer, great, but what are you going to do for a living? You know, that kind of thing. But what was interesting was that, I mean, I wasn't someone who was flippant, you know, and I captained my school in cricket, in the debates. I represented Maharashtra State at the Republic Day Parade, in the NCC. I was school captain, you know, I captained basketball. So it wasn't like, this guy is going to chuck it all away. I mean, they would see, he'd be fairly serious about whatever. So, so I have to say it was a very big decision for them. Hats off. And they tried all these things of, but why don't you finish the degree and then you do whatever you want to and whatever. Right. I'm like, why would I waste 3 years? You know, makes no sense. And even though, to give due, absolute due credit, even though he couldn't afford it at that time, my dad insisted that, okay, you, whatever education you want is not a problem. You figure out which is the best place in the world to go to, and I'll send you there. I was like, but you can't afford it right now, you know. So, and he's saying, shut up, that's none of your business, you know. And, but this is your long rope, because the education is everything. The receipt I want for it, he always had this thing about a degree. So I said, you know, photography, I don't really need a degree. I can assist people, I can learn, etc. He said, no, no, no. I want a degree to make myself happy. The degree is my receipt for the money I'm spending.
Very interesting.
Okay, so you give me my receipt. I don't care what you do with this.
As a parent, I've done my best to equip you for whatever.
So it was a great line. He said, look, you know, this is your long rope. Now you come up with it or you hang yourself is up to you. Okay, but I'm giving you that long rope. And after I've taken care of your education, your sister's education, etc., your mother and I will studiously spend your inheritance, which I thought was a very cool thing. And I have, that's one of the few lines I have brutally used with my kids. Kya padhna hai batao? Okay. You get that one shot of the title. After that, good luck, buddy. You know, and if you need me to make phone calls, I'm more than happy to make them. Need me to stand guarantor for something, I'm happy to do that. But, you know, I mean, it's, you go on your journey now. And then that safety net right now, which is right under your ass, you know, for my kids, I will move that now 30 feet below and then further below and then take it away, you know. So then
it's a great perspective. And but it's also interesting that you move from best in the country to sort of best in the world, just in terms of once you'd said photography, the fact that they said
there was nothing here.
Okay.
There wasn't anything I could go do over here. I checked that out.
Okay.
There wasn't anything. There were some small courses at JJ, which was part of learning fine art. I mean, I can't paint to save my life, you know. So it's not like I'm going to do classes in sketching and painting and wo side mein photography karo, you know, kind of thing. So it needed to be a dedicated program. At the FTII, it was primarily film.
Yeah.
And moving cameras, you know. So, and that's not what I wanted to do. So, you know, it just then boiled down to where. And at that time, there were pretty much like three or four places in the world. There's lots more options now.
Sure.
You know, I mean, even pre-internet, there were a few more. But there was RIT in Rochester. There was Brooks Institute. There's Art Center in Pasadena in California. And I think there was one in London or something.
Got it.
But Brooks had a really good reputation at that time. And there were a couple of Indians there before me. So
understood. No, but again, the, just maybe persisting with that juncture, Atul, often, especially this generation, since you spoke about the kids of today, it's very easy to be dissatisfied with the status quo and say, I want to do something else. So what's your sense on how do you separate the real passion from, you know, a distraction, if you know what I mean?
I don't know. I mean, I guess if you have to be a photographer, you have to A, focus, you know. So focus has been a strong point in my life, I suppose, even from then.
Right.
Even before it was necessary for me to focus on subjects, you know. So, I was quite clear ki yaar, I love this, you know, and what Prahlad said makes sense. And in today's day and age, I mean, you know, someone was telling me what this David Guetta kind of, you know, DJs make, and it is numbing. It's actually unbelievable, you know. So, I mean, who would have thought that, right? So, you know, the... I didn't know at that time that no matter what you would choose to do, which is true of today and maybe, let's say, from about a decade ago to now,
right,
you know, where you could make a very good living at whatever it was. So actually, it was a bit of a punt in the dark. You know, there were there weren't that many known people. When I came back, there were, I mean, I can literally name the five people who were established as photographers. Today, you can throw a stone and hit one, you know. So commercial photography. So, you know, the it just was one of those things where... Yaar karte hain yaar, you know,
and it seems then, like because at the point you made the decision, I don't hear too much of here's a career and this is what the
opportunity. In Campion, where even if I say so myself, I was like best boy and sterling student, absolutely, you know, there were I mean, my professors and all called me and said, what are you doing? And the term wasting your life showed up a lot at that time.
Interesting.
So I told, in fact, I was telling Raju Hirani, you know, I said, you know, Madhavan's track, I mean, inadvertently, of course, but Madhavan's track and Three Idiots is really my life.
Wow.
You know, because he switched in his movie from engineering to becoming a wildlife photographer.
Right.
I mean, so I shoot wildlife once in a while, but they're mostly on two legs. But, but so that's my track, so to speak. But, well, I mean, like the line in Three Idiots is, you know, you work at being very good at what you do.
Right.
And success, jhak maarte tere peeche aayegi, that kind of thing, you know. So, so it never was something, ki, if I do this, I'll make that much. Or if I did, I just want to take pictures.
Got it.
And if someone's paying me to take pictures, oh my God, how
it's
nice.
Like an icing on top.
Yeah, superb.
Got it.
Oh, they gave me an extra zero, even better. But, you know,
sure.
I'd take the picture anyway.
Got it.
You know, so...
Fascinating. And going back, you briefly spoke about the role of Gautam and what he's played in your life. And I mention this because often a lot of us at key pivotal moments, either knowingly or unknowingly, end up benefiting from a mentor. So talk to us a little bit about what he did for you. And therefore, more importantly, what does it mean for people in terms of having the right mentors around them?
So, you know, when I started investigating what professional / commercial advertising photography would entail. You know, first of all, I mean, when I asked myself, the two things that I enjoyed doing, one was writing, and I edited my school magazine called the Campion Review, and the other was this. And at that time, honestly, the profile of the writer, which again mercifully has changed, was this left of center jhola carrying khadi clad guy who sat at Samoa when he could afford it and discuss all the problems in the world that he was never going to solve anyway. You know, and the last thing I was going to be was commie, you know. I'll be a capitalist pig till I die for sure. So I said, yeah, that I can't do. Plus it seemed like you'd be scrounging around for a living. You know, and that was true at that time.
Sure.
Okay, so so I said ki, yeah, we'll do the other thing that I enjoyed. So then I started investigating more, and I whenever you looked up any magazine where there was a byline, inevitably a picture I liked was happened to be taken by Gautam. You know, so I had no idea how to connect with him. I knew nobody in the business in any form. So I went to the phone directory, and he wasn't listed. So, and Rajadaksh is a fairly common surname in Mumbai. So there's a lot of them. There were like, I don't know, 10, 20 pages of them. So every third or fourth, Rajadaksh would call and confidently say, can I speak to Gautam, please? And they said, no, wrong number. So after must be some 100 phone calls at 1 rupee a piece or whatever it was at that time, you know, finally it was some cousin or something. He said, no, haan, number nahi hai. This, you know, please
so
call.
So like the brute force method, huh? Just one after the other.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, let's not call each one. Let's just go every fifth, every sixth. And then took a little highlighter to mark. Ho gaya. Let's not call this guy again before he slaps me. In case I have to go back to the start. And, you know. So every day I would make like 10, 20 phone calls. And I finally, someone gave me the number, which was landline, of course. So I called him and I called him. I said, listen, hi, my name is so-and-so. Please don't hang up. You know, I need 2 minutes of your time. This. And, you know, I was wondering if I'd come and meet you. And I'd like to know more about what the profession is all about. So there's silence at the other end. He says, I'm at Lintas. You know, I work there, Express Stars. Come on, this is his date. I'm like, wow. So I'm going to meet the great one. So so I go there and meet him. And he was, took a great shine to me. And, you know, we remained friends. In fact, he passed away. And all Gautam did actually was give me time. You know, it was more like a patient and a shrink kind of, you know, scenario. And it was just a reassurance that, you know, it's a respectable profession. It's not the guy who says cheese at a wedding, because that's, you know, it's a photographer. That's the first image that came to mind. Are you going to be at wedding saying, sir, thoda closer, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, and there's Mitter Bedi and there's, you know, Adrian Stevens. And this is the kind of stuff they do. I went for one shoot that he was doing with Vilas Bhende, you know, and watched one shoot in action, and so on. So I never really assisted him, hung out with him on one shoot.
And this is all when you were pursuing your UDCT degree, or you decided to move on?
No, so this is at the end of the first year, and then through that second year period.
Got it.
And then I just registered at Xavier's just in case my application didn't go through.
The plan B. Okay.
And whatever. And, you know, at that time, it was really bizarre. And people have no idea how tough it was. There was no provision for you to get official foreign exchange to go for a bachelor's degree abroad.
Wow.
Yeah. So now it's, you can go for anything. You couldn't go.
So how would you find
exactly. Yourself? So my dad said, I'm not doing any hawala nonsense at all. And, you know, these good Gaud Saraswat Brahmins from... rooted from Karwar, they don't do such things. So he said, you want to go, I have no problem, but you please get an official permit. I'm like, how do you expect me to do that? He said, now go figure it out. So I went to the RBI rule book. They said, there are only, you know, you can go if A, you prove that it's not available in India, and B, which is the...
That degree is not available.
Degree is not available in India, and a bachelor's program. And the second thing is you have to prove that it's useful for the country. Now, that is now so
subjective.
Me, what do you say, man? So, now then I realized that, you know, our people, nobody in our country wants to take or very few people, let me rephrase that, want to take a call and put a letter down that actually has no harm to them. But, you know, they don't want to do it. Why? Because why take that
unknown
1% chance of whatever? So if you write to Bombay University and say, give me a letter that says that, you know, so I told them this is my problem. You need to tell me that this degree is not available in whatever. They won't give you the letter. So he's saying, okay. I said, no, but I have to, you don't have it, right? In Bombay University. They said, no. I said, so why can't you write it and say, I don't have it? Then they thought to themselves and they said, okay, I tell you what. You write to us saying, ki, I want to study photography. Where in Bombay University I can do it? And then we'll say, we have no such course. One line. You know, which is in direct reply to your reply. So, you know,
correct. You take the onus of making the claim.
Huh? Yeah. So, you know, now, so I did that from 4 or 5 universities. And Bombay, at least you can go there and catch somebody, physically, you know, in the office. Now, get it from Delhi. Good luck. You know, so I would send letters to them registered with a self-addressed stamped envelope inside. So, yeah. You just have to make it easy for you. Just slip it in there and send it back. you know, and 16 reminders later. So I got 4 or 5 of those, wow, first of all, to prove in India. And then I literally went and beat down the doors of every single ad agency. This is a random stranger walking in. Ki, sir, please, Mohammad Khan, you know, this is the thing. I've got this. I need the second part. As many documents I can get from people saying photography will be useful for the country. Will be, please word it in your own way.
So this is for Forex.
Forex.
All this is for just Forex. Having...
This is after my dad said, you can't go if you
this
can't...
Is, you've got the admit. And yeah. Now you're trying now to organize the
official Forex. And it wasn't very much. It was like $6,000 a year, you know, so, at that time. Well, you know. So then I must have got literally like 50 letters from various people. Every ad agency, any person, whatever, karke, and this is just going there. And actually, I should tell my kids this, you know. And this is what I mean about safety net. My dad took it away. He said, "You now do figure the mehnat, na."
Figure it out.
And then at that point, I said, "Yeah, whatever happens now, I will make this work." You know, and so then I think we put it in a sense of perspective. I'm actually quite shocked that now that I think about it. I mean, you walked into Enterprise next. Do you have an appointment? No. Can I meet Mohammad Khan? Seriously, you know. So can I meet Alec Padamsi? Who are you again? You know, sir, this is my problem. This is, you're talking to the receptionist. To get yeah, past yeah. the receptionist whose job is to stonewall you. Yeah, you know, yeah. And no, you can't, please. And he said, please, this is my problem. Can I speak to his secchi? His secchi at least. So at least you pass that. So this is the thing. Can I write a note? I'll wait. There goes the day.
It's persistence, right?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
No, and so, a couple of things, Atul. One is, even going back to the Gautam conversation, it wasn't a, I want a job conversation. It was a, let me figure out what this profession is.
Yeah.
And then conclude. So I think that when you have that, I think it sort of elevates you on a certain level, saying, you know, I'm not here desperately to sell myself, but really genuinely to find out if this profession makes sense for me. So it's interesting that you sort of structured it that way. And second is, from an entrepreneurship standpoint, I mean, one of the things I've heard from people is you're always opening doors much bigger than you. It's a bit like what you just described. Every door that you were trying to open was probably much bigger than you at that stage.
Oh yeah,
sort
yeah.
of just having the tenacity to keep knocking and keep the faith, I guess.
And I think it just bore down from just you know, just passion. Mm. You know, now I've seen a couple of shoots. I think that is what I'm pretty certain. This is what I want to do.
Got it.
And I have a feeling I'd be good at it. You know, and you know, and then good or not good, I know. Okay, I can like.
It's worth a shot.
I mean, I'd be good at it. I don't know, successful or not, but it definitely is something that I can, you know, do. So that's the, and then you just sort of do it, yeah, you know. I never thought in terms of, like, I was telling my kids the other day, I met this guy from Rajasthan, okay. Tried very hard to, you know, meet with me, and I didn't give him time of day. There was no connection. He just wanted to meet. So, sure. Finally, he connected with someone in the office, then someone who didn't give him time of day. He finally connected with one very sweet guy who basically loves a sob story. And he got suckered into coming to me to saying, sir, I think you should meet this guy. I said, why? You know, I mean, like, we don't, are not involved in that thing. He's messaged me before, etc. He said, no, I think there's some interesting things. We could probably have some synergies, etc. Finally, I met with him. Not a whole lot happened. Essentially, what he was doing was he was selling, you know, things like Facebook likes and, you know.
Wow. Okay.
Instagram followers, and you know, I can get so many views, whatever. And his thing was that he was selling them to the digital companies who were selling them on to the music companies and production houses. He's saying, sir, you can open all those doors. Why don't you get into a partnership with me? We can make a lot of money. Here's the money that they're overbilling for things I'm doing for them. So I said, see, I just find that grotesque to think that you need to buy these things and say, ki, 80 million, so many million views and so many. And actually, it's not the case. They're a bunch of bot accounts or whatever, you know, so. So I said, yeah, I don't want to do it. But I was telling my kids that, I said, the guy can't string 3 straight sentences in English.
Right.
Okay. He has not let that hamper him. Mm. Okay. He wants to now open a way bigger door, and he has just not taken no for an answer. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, now in your line of work where you've been so mollycoddled along the way and wrapped in cotton wool from your home bubble to your lift bubble to your underground parking bubble to your car bubble.
Yep.
Then you're fully insulated from the universe.
The real life,
and you,
yeah.
And you reach your school bubble, college bubble, da 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 da, airplane bubble. You've just been bubbled through the entire system.
Yep.
And I have jumped railway tracks. I have jumped into, you know, running buses, whatever. No problem. Every person wants a better life for their kids than they
sure.
had.
Sure.
Sure. No problem. And I'm saying, बाहर जाके ना चार धक्के खाने चाहिए बिकॉज द ब्रूटैलिटी व्हेन दिस गाय कम्स इनटू द रिंग विद हिज फिस्ट स्विंगिंग यू हैव नो चांस बिकॉज ही विल चू यू एंड स्पिट यू आउट एनी डे ऑफ द वीक बिकॉज यू आर जस्ट नॉट स्ट्रांग इनफ एंड यू आर नॉट tenacious enough and you're not
and you he's know, heard a lot more no's than you right so many people have told him no and he sort of like you has kept knocking and some door somewhere will open
correct
guess, right
you know and you just don't whatever. So you know I find these stories quite remarkable so nothing happened but the take from this was ki yaar he managed to do what he wanted to do which was get FaceTime
eventually got to it yeah got you the know, time he wanted
yeah right. And
interesting and just talking about this success in a field like this Atul I mean, is it fair to say it's a creative profession and it's at some level it seems like a low odds career, right? For a person looking at this profession, just the
right now probably yes, not then.
Not then.
Yeah.
So how do back to the point about marrying passion with pragmatism? So how should let's say an individual at the cusp today, who feels a lot like you did at that time, how should a person think about taking the plunge?
So. For example, I believe that the only way I can pay back what Gautam did is to essentially pay it forward. Okay, so in my head, the time that Prahlad and Gautam spent with me is not a debt I can ever repay.
Yeah.
So even Prahlad called me for something utterly random, without question, if I'm free, I will always honor it and make time to attend. And it's not like, acha, I've done 8 of them now, we are done. Okay, the debt will never be repaid, very clearly. Okay, in my head. So, I'm saying ki, if someone comes to me, by and large, I've taken the time to meet with them or chat with them, at least on the phone or review their work or whatever. I feel that photography is ridiculously saturated right now.
As a
number of photographers, okay. There's just too many people and there's just ridiculous undercutting going on. And the people who are making money is a very small bunch at the top who are inherently shooting celebrities. So what happens if the celebrity is getting paid 20 lakhs, 50 lakhs, 1 crore, 2 crores a day? And if they say, usko bulao, okay, whatever that person charging is pocket change compared to what you stand to lose. You know, in that day, you're doing the film, you're doing the stills, just give what you want. So, you know, so on the day, if that photographer is billing you 2 lakhs, 3 lakhs, 4 lakhs a day, it's sure. Take care. You know, it's fine.
Right.
It's par for the course for that. Now there's a 1,000 kids out there, established people out there who are vying for that job. And the level below that is a bona fide disaster. You know, there's just a lot of... So what I'm telling people is that, look, you know what? If you like photography, that's fine. What's wrong with video? And that is such an exponentially large market that you can do what you love, except it's moving.
Understood.
You know, and in the digital world, for example, what's happening is not even funny. You know, it's just the... option for visual entertainment now, you know, which is a separate discussion, but is really has come onto your TV screen and your iPad and your phone and, yep. You know, and so on. Somebody's shooting that.
Got
and
it.
It's all video, you know. So why aren't you there? So having said this, in any profession,
right.
If you're at the very, very top and you're so good, then again, you know, success jagmarte. You know, aapke piche aayegi, whether in New York, whether here or wherever.
But back to this point about a few people who are working with celebrities who are commercially making the returns. What does it take to get there? I mean, I'm sure there is a certain skill set which takes it.
No, I mean, A, you have to be good. B, you have to be in that person's good books.
There's a relationship piece as well.
You know, there's a relationship which actually earlier didn't exist that much. I mean, they liked you, nice guy. Now I find that there are a lot of, photographers who are fully... Goosed into, you know, their personal lives and they're hanging and they, you know, whatever. If you're hanging because you're a friend, it's one thing. If you're hanging because, hey, bro, I'm here, you know, then you check up with their managers, then you suck up to their managers. Yaar, kaun sa shoot aa raha hai, what's happening? You haven't shot for this brand for a long time. So, right. You know, karke. When then call the brand manager over there. Ki, you know, he really shoots with me all the time.
Got it.
And what happens is at that level, the brand manager is least bothered. You know, unless they're so specific that only X or Y will shoot,
right?
They really don't care. They're like, you know, okay, okay, this guy, if he wants this guy, they don't bother investigating. Ki, no. Does he really want this guy? Does he really?
Hunger so, wins, basically, right? That's the point you're making. If you're hungry enough and you're sort of.
No, you need to now be doing a lot of setting, you know, to make sure that you're in the mix. So, this is, of course, assuming that all 5, 8, 10, 30 people that are there are all good enough to do the job. And that is the case. They're all good enough to do the job. It's no big deal, you know. Especially most celebrity photography is so basic that, you know, it's, you're doing 2 days work in 2 hours and you know, okay, just hold product, smile and, you know, boom, 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 you're done.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, how hard can that be? So,
but in a creative field like this, Atul, therefore, for you to really push the boundaries of excellence, what does excellence mean? Let's say, how do you, let's take a
so your great photography would happen.
When do you stop? When do you know that you've done enough to really get the best shot possible for a single, for a product or whatever the case might be? How do you draw the line?
I mean, on a commercial job, at the point where you know the client is happy and you're happy, you need to be professional enough to make sure that it doesn't really leave your door until you know you've delivered it over a certain line. And then I guess that absolutely perfect shot, any photographer will tell you that they haven't done that many in their lives that they know that they just can't improve it. You know, you'll say, maybe I could have, you know, that's always open to a subjective kind of conversation. And so, you know, so you need to know that you've done your absolute best, because otherwise you won't last very long.
And talking about the digital revolution, in a lot of ways, if I look at the corporate world, the digital wave has really changed the way a lot of leaders lead. And a lot of leaders stay up to date with what's going on. How's that influenced success in your field of work? And the reason I ask is, earlier you had to get the picture right. Now I think the digital post-production leaves you with a lot of opportunity to make amends for mistakes that might have been made. So how does that work for you?
So at a technical level, what's happened is that most of the photography now is on the computer. So let's say the depth of knowledge that I had lighting cars, which is curved sheet metal and, you know, and curved glass.
Yeah.
Extremely difficult to, you know, sort of get right. So nobody's doing that anymore. The car is generated on a computer. And once that's done, it can be twisted, turned in any way you want, lit in any way you want, placed wherever you want. You don't even need to take the car there.
Wow.
You know, so if you have some stunning background plates from wherever, then, you know, you're done. Just place
the car. Complexity has been taken out of the equation.
So now it's the guy on the computer who has generated the car. And then each turn, magnification, whatever that happens is then easy enough to then sort out. Do you still want to be selling horse carriages when the car, you know, you don't want to be the last guy selling horse carriages when, you know, the car dealerships have arrived, thing. So there's no problem. That's technology, innovation, it's a constant, it's going to go on. So I've maintained this from day one, is that your knowledge in photography or your expertise in photography will depend greatly on how much you read and immerse yourself in all the arts. And you're just generally aware and you're a sponge and you accumulate and assimilate and, you know. You should have a keen interest in all the other arts, in fine arts, sculpture, in cuisine, in architecture, in, you know, in whatever it is that I think that then adds to a broader graphic design, whatever. You need not know how to design something, but you can appreciate good from great to, you know.
It's having an eye for that sort of...
I mean, if I'm doing a lecture for Nikon or something every once in a while, I'm like, I'll have a conversation. I'll ask them, okay, how many of you been to this place? You know, and a few hands will go up. Did any of you visit this museum? They have no clue. Or very rarely is there. Even if you say something like London. Yeah, did you get away from Oxford Street? You know, did you go to the Tate? Did you go to, you know, whatever? And even if you went to shop, did you bother going to, let's say, Portobello Road as opposed to the standard nonsense that everybody does? And no problem after you've done that. But if you are in the arts, you need to be aware of all the other arts, you know. So similarly, you know, like when it comes to photography, it's there's a certain, like I like to call it a democratization of the medium.
Correct.
And it's just become massively accessible to everybody. So on a given day, your doctor could take a world-class photo. You know, and by himself, aided with some filters, apps, etc., whatever it is. That photo is unbelievable. Point is that can he do that time and time again and day after day, you know, then I guess you'd be a great professional. But why I say this medium has become so democratic is because on a given day, the doctor can take a great picture, you know, on no day can you either prescribe medicine for one of his patients, nor can you perform a heart surgery.
Yeah.
Forget it. Yep. Okay. So that ain't happening. Digital or no digital, you know.
Yeah.
So on a given day, that guy can, you can't design that building, but your architect can take a world-class picture.
Yeah.
You know. So to some extent, it's not cheapened is not the right word, but higher maybe kar sakta hun, you know. So,
True. It's made it accessible. I mean, if I were to use a metaphor from the sporting world, I remember reading an article which talks about the difference between Usain Bolt and, let's say, Michael Phelps.
Hmm.
They say that not everybody is a swimmer, but everybody can run. So that makes him, you know, that much of a bigger deal because he's competing in a completely democratized sport. So at some level, you know, your sport, everybody with a phone, that's probably taking it too far, but everybody with a decent camera is a photographer.
No, James Cameron just said that. Nah, if you have a phone camera with a video in it,
right,
you are now a director.
Correct, technically.
Yeah, go make a film.
So the entry barriers have come down.
Karo yaar. What's stopping you?
But actually, when you look at people who've managed to sustain greatness over a period of time, let's say if you saw someone like a Gautam, and if you look at somebody over a long period of time, what have they done to really stay relevant and continue the excellence over a period of time?
So I love the word relevance. I'm glad you used it because I think I have hats off to people who have managed to do that in their careers for long. I mean, like, for example, whatever criticism anyone, let's say, does of Mr. Bachchan, you know, I'm a huge admirer, you know, and I'm a huge admirer just from the fact that he wakes up every day and he thinks to himself that, you know, this is a new day, it's a new fight.
Right.
You know, kal tak jo kiya hai, bhul jao. Aaj kya kiya batao. Okay. And onward ho. You know, and then I don't know when the man sleeps, but he still writes his blog and he'll date it and he'll number it. Then it's incredible, you know.
True.
So, and he has stayed relevant and he's getting paid a lot of money and more power to him, whether to endorse something or whether to, you know, whatever. So I think if you can do that over a sustained period of time, it is only because of a couple of things, I think. One is the fear that you will be number 4, 5, 8 or forgotten, you know, and that's traumatic to most. So then you work extra hard. So I guess it's like Muhammad Ali wearing a top, you know, top hat and tails and walking down Trafalgar Square. And the day before he was fighting Henry Cooper and made a poem in his Ali-esque way, which I forget, but basically saying that Cooper will fall in four. You know, now are you insane? Black man in the 60s walking up and down Trafalgar Square. Tere desh mein aake, keh raha hun ki tere champion ko haraunga, wo bhi kis round mein?
Right.
You know, are you completely mad? You know, and this without security, a couple of his boys, you know, karke. I mean, I'm amazed he didn't get killed, you know. So now that puts incredible pressure to work that much harder and do a few more push-ups or whatever it
to
is.
Back the claim.
Know, to back that claim because, you know, you're going to fall in a pile of dung, buddy, if you don't, you know, back that. Amazing, you know.
Got it.
I guess it's a fear of failure at one or the fear of irrelevance that would drive most people. You know, I was just talking a couple of days ago about, let's say, film directors. Look at Clint Eastwood. I mean, somewhere in his 80s, and we're talking Dirty Harry, who made some utterly time-pass westerns in his time.
Right.
I never had any great respect for him then in his heyday as an actor. You know, but man, I will touch his feet if I meet him now. Because, I mean, oh my God. You know, yeah. I mean, oh my God. As an actor. B, as a director, what has he done? He's like, you cannot be doing American Sniper at 80. You know, he's 80 something. It's a really complicated film on location, you know, and bombed out areas is like hectic. And, you know, if you've been in a film shoot, you know how difficult it is what he has done. And he's doing that at 80 something. He is not saying, hi, what I've done is enough for a lifetime achievement in whatever the hell I want it to be. And let's now stop. And okay, it's a new morning. Let's
fascinating. I was
incredible
talking to some friends about his last movie, Sully.
Yeah,
about the plane which landed on the Hudson. And just that the nuance that he brings out about the decision making under stress, it's just and the eye for detail and the
shocking.
It's unbelievable.
Now there are directors out here who've been directing since they were, you know, I suppose in their late 20s, early 30s, massively successful in their time, can't put a movie together. And you're 60 something, you know, early 60s, whatever. What went wrong? Did you just sit on your laurels and say, hi, that movie of mine, of course, terrific film. Then what? It's done. It's over. It's gone. You know. Now, after we got the national award for Neerja, you know, I told myself, we are not discussing this again.
Congratulations.
Okay. Yeah. You know, thank you. But, you know, it's over. It's done. It's gone. Aage bado. Okay. Now, you know, somewhere, if we've got 10 films and they do a retrospective, of course, it'll come up. And sure. Someone might ask an anecdote from it. That's fine.
Sure.
But there's nothing to crow about anymore.
Got it.
Ho gaya. It's done.
You bank it and move on.
It's gone. Move on, you know. And I just think that with the absolute assault every day on the amount of information in every form that's coming at you, you know, the time to mull and reminisce and all is like has been reduced, if it's there anyway, you know.
Got it.
So whatever, you know, correct. So yeah, I mean, if you see something like deaths, okay, people die, okay, just as surely as they will be born. And if you notice now, life moves on after a death, any death, much faster than it ever did. I mean, the people who've lost their own are back at work in like 2 days, you know, karke ho gaya, you know, relatives. It's not like relatives are hanging for 10 days like they used to.
It's a great point.
You know, and there's no time.
Tolerance for reminiscing of the past is just...
Over. A 13-day mourning, are you mad? You know, no. Come on.
Satul, moving on, you've started as a photographer, but clearly you've moved on to do other things. The Kingfisher Calendar was sort of an entrepreneurial venture. You're now into celebrity management. You take care of people's personal brand using images. So talk to us a little bit about how you've thought about entrepreneurship along the way with the basis photography.
Actually, again, I think the core of it was that if I looked at the market in India, it just seemed like a lot of people in this profession became, or even abroad for that matter, at some point it tended to become irrelevant sometime in their 50s, you know, after 60 to forget it, you know. So it just seemed like this is a younger man or woman's job. And if an art director who's handing out the assignment happens to be, you know, late 20s, early 30s, at some point, if you're 55, you're going to be uncle. Okay. Yep. They'd rather work with somebody who, even however cool you think you are, there's a cooler person who happens to be 20 years younger, you know. So, so I figured at some point you're going to get nudged out of the mix.
Right.
There needed to be a realize that, you know, you need to have a plan B in place at some point. The other thing to it was that when I did a 3-year degree program in Brooks, and then I assisted for a year in Los Angeles with a bunch of different photographers, and they all had agents, and you know, they just took the picture, okay, and someone else went and sourced the work for them, chased the work for them, wined and dined the art directors if necessary, you know, chased the money, got them paid. All of the above.
Took care of the commercial stuff.
Everything. And, you know, and realized what kind of work they wanted to do. Pushed the photographer if they felt he wasn't working hard enough or, you know, could deliver more.
Right.
I need more pieces like this, you know, work at it, whatever. So.
And that industry didn't exist in India at that time?
No, I came back and I said, I think I'll get an agent. And I said, what's that? You know, so it was always in the back of my head that. So I think it seemed like a logical sort of thing to get into because there was a need. And so one did. And as far as the Kingfisher Calendar was concerned, I mean, at a very simple level, one wanted to be able to do an assignment where I didn't really need to answer to too many layers, because you felt that the creative process got somewhere along the way, possibly became, you know, a camel is a horse designed by a committee kind of situation. You know, so then you start looking for the lowest denominator of agreement. And then,
right,
you know.
Right.
So I said, yeah, here I want to answer to one person. If that person likes it, we're good.
Right.
Eventually someone's paying the bill. So sure. That person needs to like it. Sure.
Sure.
But I'd always been fascinated by a process where, you know, a photographer like Bruce Weber would get a assignment where he would... be told, okay, this is Calvin Klein's new perfume. It's called Eternity. You know, these are the catchwords and da, da, da. Now, go forth, Bruce, and bring us the images and we'll put our logo below. You know, it needs to say Eternity. And then Bruce will put on his thinking cap and do some tests and then whatever. And then shoot, and they'll come back and say, this is it. And they, and Calvin Klein says, wonderful, just what I've been looking for.
So you own the creative sort of the process.
And there Bruce Weber was talking to Calvin Klein, and the discussion is between those two heavyweights, and they you know, have figured out what the world wants, and the hedonistic era of obsession is over, and it's much more family, it's much more togetherness. So let the light be much more backlit and white and beautiful and shadowless. And
sure,
you know, and the obsession campaign was, you know, 3-4 naked people on a swing, and you know, it was much more sort of mad. And again, what happens in celeb management is that, you know, you build up somebody, you work very hard and not make very much in the early part of their career. Then they start blossoming, and then 10 people pop up at the woodwork and say, ki, you know, come to us, we'll be cheaper. Come to us, we'll do this. Come to us, we'll be that. So at a time when it's, it would seem fair that when that person is doing really well, you're there as well to collect in the journey together. There's no such thing. Mm. Okay. So if once they've arrived, a lot of people tend to forget where they came from. You know, and they, and then, yeah, I mean, the only about decent thing they might do is say that, you know, you've been with me for a while, some XY is at the table and is offering to, is offering to do it at half. If you can match that, you can please stay, you know.
At least give you a shot.
Yeah. So that's about the, but I mean, you know, if you started to think that, star X made, you know, 20 per year, hence we built two, we are estimating that it could be 25 this year. So we'll make 2.5. Maybe I should make a down payment on that house. Okay. Mm. Right. Or whatever. You make some calculations accordingly. Mm. You could well have a situation where star X comes and says, ki, listen, someone's at the table willing to do it at half. So if you can do it at half, then great. And you say, let's say yes. And then all of a sudden your two didn't become 2.5. It became one and a quarter. You know, so you're like, okay. So.
But back to how do you. So we said, let's own some IP. Got it.
So in which case, let's, you know, try and do something that actually we're responsible for. And, you know, you own that. Mm. And that creative process is yours. And for better or worse, it remains with you.
Understood.
And so on. So that, then the talk was, should we do a TV show? Should we do a digital something? I came across a 7-pager. One of my partners, Shanti, came across a 7-pager that Sivan Quadras had written. And to give us due credit, to be honest, he had written Mary Kom, but we didn't know that. Mm-hmm. You know, and Mary Kom had not released. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we bought a 7-pager from the hit writer of Mary Kom. We just bought it from somebody who looked like Jesus and who walked in through the door pretty much. We said, okay, if we get the rights from the family, we'll try and make this film.
Right.
So we actually believed it from a paper.
Got it.
And, but I'm enjoying this. I think, you know, I have more a friend who's a spiritual guide. He lives in Bangalore, and he was saying that, I think it's an excellent space for you, because what you may not see is, but what he sees, and it actually turned out to be quite true. He's saying, you know, you're actually a very, habitable platform for people who otherwise would never meet each other to be pulled onto and to coexist and work in a harmonious way and be able to create.
That's a great perspective.
Yeah. So I never quite thought of that. Yeah. So I said, I'm a platform. Okay. So, you know, and it's
and
true.
What,
I mean,
what made him say that, according to you? What do you think?
No, I was actually talking in terms of, you know, should I stop doing photography? Should I do this? Should I do film production or not?
Right.
Seems like a dirty business. There are all kinds of, you know, people who, I mean, for me, what you say is what you mean. I mean, if you didn't mean it, why did you say it? You know, you know, I hate to think that I have to spend my time thinking he said this, but what did they mean? Where's the catch? Just look properly at clause 14.C.8, whatever, you know, karke. So.
Sure.
You know, I mean, like, this is it. This is the deal. Which part did you miss? You know, it's like, there isn't any skullduggery. You know, it's just so tiresome to lie and play these silly games. You know, I mean, like, if it's not, it doesn't work for you, it's fine. Like the other day, someone said no to a script we had, which is really okay, you know. And, but they did the classic Bollywood thing of the idea of saying no because you might hurt them is, to just avoid. So finally, I sat the person down. I said, listen, I'll tell you what. I'm made of sterner stuff. Okay. I'm very fond of you, and we can still be friends, and we may make a movie together. We may never make a movie together. It's still okay. You know, we'll still be friends. It's okay. Okay. What will really piss the crap out of me is if you, you know, decide to play these silly games and ignore and then duck and whatever. It's not that complicated.
Let's decouple the relationship and the transaction, right?
Yaar, wo kya hai na, this doesn't work for me right now. We'll find something else at some point, I hope.
Yep.
Wonderful. Yep. Rock and roll. How are the kids? you know, bas ho gaya, you know.
Correct.
So this whole, so he said, no, you're good at this. You have to be the alkali who sort of neutralizes acidic situations. And, you know, you just bring them and...
You're back to your chemical industry background, huh?
and create an atmosphere where people can be harmonious. They work nicely as a meshing unit and they do this. So, actually, in Tumhari Sulu, we've really got an excellent bunch of people working together. You know, right. At some point, when the director has written it, and it's very close, then we managed to convince him that it needs little more additional writing and punching up.
Sure.
So he agreed. Then we got a writer that he was comfortable with.
Right.
And so he still feels like it's his
ownership. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really important. And Suresh is a great guy. And then he has then involved other people, you know, and we've suggested whoever we thought and where it's worked, he's taken it, where someone else has worked, we've let that happen. And it's beautiful when, you know, people are now, the art director owns the script.
Right.
The DOP owns the script.
Right.
You know, and the guy who is told that when, Atul Kasbekar's unit leaves this place, it will be left as good as when we found it.
Mm.
So they will not say, look at all that plastic in the, you know, chucked in the back and look sure. at all that. So, and he owns that part of the script to know that of the production, ki, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to make sure I do a great job. And there's so many different units working together.
Got it.
If you create that space, it's great.
And back to the celebrity management, you said you work with people and help them build up. How do you spot potential, right? It's like in the music industry as well, right? How do you, as a scout?
There's no formula, but...
what do you look for?
I have an eye for picking out the X factors. There's lots of beautiful people, but you put 8 people in a room, I'll tell you who has the spark.
Hmm? And is there a way to decode that recipe? Which is sort of more generalizable around attitude.
Just gut. I mean, when Deepika Padukone walked into the door, it was really, for example, someone who, the gynax who delivered my twins, she's their niece.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, I don't want to meet people. I want to see their pictures because,
sure.
you know, I only need to know what you look like in pictures.
Sure.
She said, no, please meet my niece. And she happens to be Prakash's daughter. So,
sure.
you know, so I said, oh, wait, Prakash's daughter. I want to meet Prakash's daughter.
Sure.
You know, because... I'm a huge sports junkie and, you know, her dad was always one of my heroes. So we met. But you meet this coltish looking thing at 18, 19 and you're like, you know, oh my God, where have we been hiding our whole lives? Mm. She had not even really shot any pictures per se. Mm. So, but you just felt that there was something special here. So it just hits you.
Mm.
And you've met enough 19, 20 year olds and it doesn't hit you that, you know what, there's a spark here.
It's more an instinct. And back to film production, how do you walk the tightrope of creativity and commerce, right? I'm always curious as a producer, at some level, you're solving for commercial returns. But at the same time, you need to ensure that the creative tastes are in line with what the audience needs. So how do you, as a producer, how do you walk that line?
Okay, so in our head, we're redefining in our head. And honestly, we're too new in the business to be giving any kind of gyan.
Mm.
But I believe it's in a state of flux and it's prepared, the audience is prepared to like listen to alternative points of view.
Mm.
Okay. So I think in our head, what we tell ourselves is, A, we want to make a commercial film that we are proud of. Okay, one.
Mm.
It needs to be a commercial film.
Mm.
And the definition of a commercial film for us is one that works commercially.
And is there sort of a predetermined return that you have in mind? Saying
no, you can't. Nobody. Okay. There's no pundits in this game.
Okay? Yep.
Everybody's an expert after the fact, you know. But it's not like some big, massive studio who knows nothing other than making movies, right? And they've been weaned in the business. They don't wake up one day and says, "Yar, everybody come to the conference room. Think of the most crappy idea you have, and let's make a gigantic flop." Nobody says that,
of
right?
Course.
Everybody thinks that they're making the next Sholay or the next Three Idiots or whatever, you know. So, and there's so much effort that goes into making a single movie that, you know, it's traumatic when it gets wiped out of the box office, really. So, nobody knows.
Mm.
Anyone tells you they know, they don't.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
Other than Aamir and Salman, there's no such thing as a guaranteed minimum box office draw anymore.
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, in the same year, you could have two movies with the same actor. One does well, one doesn't
sure.
do well. So even our audience, I think, is in a state of let's figure out what we want to watch kind of thing. And what the internet has done is that on Friday afternoon, the smell of the movie has gone forth and a group of people sitting saying ki yaar weekend pe kya kare ye picture dekhe kya nahi yaar suna hai bahut ghatiya kya bol rahe ho
you know facebook ha I know
and boom yeah. just like that your plans have gone haywire or they've said I believe it's damn good let's go you know now who would have figured that the biggest grossing hindi film is a dubbed telugu film let that sink in
yep
you know and you know so you know what and
and what worked in that case? I mean, if you had to reflect on that, you're talking about Bahubali, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's just the scale and the, you know, you haven't seen level of VFX like this. You know,
right.
it's full fantasy movie, massive Indian emotions, another level of production
right.
of whatever. So,
right.
And it worked. Right. Now, the fact of the matter is that that doesn't mean that everybody who spends... 300 crores making a film is guaranteed to rake in 1,000 of the net NBOC at the box office. So, you know, so.
Yeah. So, just a changing track, Atul, I've heard you talk in a couple of other forums about this whole supplier mindset versus being a trusted advisor. That really appeals to me because, in a, and that concept is relevant in several other professions, in any profession where it's very easy to get into that vendor mindset. So talk to us a little bit about what you mean by that and what it means in your profession and what the lessons are.
So I've realized that for me, it's most fulfilling and gratifying to be in a creative space.
Yep.
So in the process of creation or whatever, whether it's a movie or whether it's someone's career or whether it is a photograph or so on. I feel it is extremely important, especially speaking for myself in the creative space where you... make everybody in the mix seem really important and valued and bring them to the table early enough. Mm-hmm. So, for example, let's say, since we were discussing the Kingfisher calendar, the, you know, the stylist is brought on 2 months before we've left for shoot, 3 months before. They know they're doing the job.
Yeah.
Now, I want to know, what do you think? What are the trends? Should we are thinking of shooting in Mykonos? Apart from the obvious blue and white of the Grecian stripes, okay, what are we, you know, okay, what do you think of hair? And, you know, these are the models I'm thinking of. What do you think? You know, so this, what do you think empowers a lot of people to
co-create.
Feel like they belong and they co-create and then they go beyond just the transactional value of what you're paying them to do that. You know, and I think then when you do that, that's really, you've arrived in a good space. So it would really bother me when people said, you know, I mean, you're a supplier. Okay, you know, supplier payments only come in these many days. Screw you, I'm not a supplier. If I'm a supplier, then you've lost me, you know, very early. You know, so. Then it's a very transactional kind of thingy. So I think it's really important. I've learned this along the way that at least when I'm, you know, doing this, I'm going to ensure that everybody feels like a Meri project. So for example, when we did Neerja, we couldn't have done it without literally so many people feeling like it's theirs. So for example, I spoke to Naresh Goyal and I said, listen, there's this Punjabi girl whose story you may not have heard of. I'm sending you a one pager. We don't have the money. It's a female oriented film. We don't have the money. I need your Jet Airways hangars for 2 days and some work at the airport, etc. And I need Sonam and the crew to be trained by your stewardesses, training college, whatever
sure.
that is,
sure.
for 1 week. And I have no money to pay you. He said, no, we'll work out a good deal. I said, no, the only deal is free. Okay. And I'm not the kind to otherwise negotiate. I mean, I'll reach London and send him a text saying this flight was great, this flight was not great, this food was awesome, this was not, you know, whatever. But wo huck se I'm telling you because paise deke aa chuka hu main. I'm not telling you before hoping that you upgrade me or some, you know, sidey stuff like that, which other people do. So he knows it's not the kind of stuff that I would inherently. So he said, done. You know, same thing with Sanjeev Goenka at Saregama. You know, we asked for...
But what was in it for him, out of curiosity? Was it just the relationship that you had?
I think relationship, and they just felt that they were suddenly part of a movie-making process that this story needed to be told.
Got it.
I would like your help to tell this story.
Got it.
It's that simple.
Understood.
And that was the truth. There's no, you know, skullduggery in that at all. You know, same thing with Sanjeev Goenka. We need bye-bye and goes good night. I need the rights for free. Okay. That's about a 25 lakh value. You know, for them to give the Rajesh Khanna song. But we needed the song. And Sanjeev was nice enough to say, yeah, this is a great story, bolte hai, chalo, done. You know, I mean, Fox was in shock that, you know, we got anything from Saregama for free. And why should we? It's a business for them. you know, to sell music rights.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's only fair they charge their whatever it is they do. They thought this was worth it and they felt part of the process, you know.
Very interesting. And so how do you enlist people into your vision and your dream?
You know, I think at the base level, of it's just about honesty.
Mm.
You know, if you're just achingly honest, then I think at some point, I told someone we were collaborating with, I said, see, I'll tell you what, you can go through the whole rigmarole of, you know, finding out for yourself, but I can cut to the chase and tell you right now.
Right.
And then later you can tell me whenever you figure it out. I said, you know, that we're really decent blokes to work with.
Right.
Okay. So, and one cut, two pieces, what you see is what you get. Simple.
Mm.
Okay. So, I'm not, so... So he actually put a Facebook post some 1 year later. He said, you know, he told me this long back and I have to say he was right. It's quite sweet.
So, the fact that it left an impression in him, the fact that he told him.
You can go through all this negotiating, but I'm telling you.
So just wrapping up, Atul, it's been a truly energizing conversation. Again, this podcast is titled Play to Potential, which is about individuals finding their passion and living it to the best of their capability. Any one or two things in conclusion? That you want the listeners to walk away with for them to play to their potential?
I think whatever choices people are making right now, they really need to be careful. I mean, there's that WhatsApp post going around, which is also on Facebook, in terms of how most lawyers will be redundant, this will be redundant, etc., etc. You know, you must have read it.
Yeah.
So I think it's extremely important for there's one thing about your passion and to understand whether your passion realistically has a future or what. Because, I mean, just like one had the industrial revolution, we're in the middle of a revolution.
Agreed.
Okay. And you need to be extremely careful that you're not selling horse carriages when there are cars.
Yeah.
You know, so to use a metaphor, I'm just saying, like I said, someone comes to me saying, I want to do photography. I said, please do. But do consider first, you know, being a cameraman shooting video, because I think the prospects of a successful life are, and you're still taking pictures.
Okay? Don't ignore the trends, yeah.
You know, so I think it given that, and the other thing is, there are just far too many human beings out there. You know, there's just, whatever it is you're looking to do, there is someone who's willing to do it cheaper.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know about better, but certainly cheaper. Now, and there are not that many clients out there who want to pay for Louis Vuitton. You know, so either you have to be so good, okay, that, yaar, wo chahiye to uske baad jana hi padega. Then whether you're a, you know, kadiya placing marble, but what you do, you're a freaking artist, you know, great. You'll get the money and you'll get paid your due. If not, you better be the guy who's literally everywhere and you're the Coke can. You know, you're 30 feet away from whoever and then you, whatever. So I think that in-between guy's going to get wiped out. If you're not careful. So you just need to sort of be everywhere. That's at a very simplistic level. I'm no economist, but it seems like that's the way you... So your choices, I think you need to investigate what the future is likely to hold. Because again, I don't think there are any experts who absolutely for certain know.
Yeah.
But so thoda sa be careful.
Got it. And thank you so much, Atul. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Sincerely appreciate you making the time.
Thank you. Thank you, Deepak.
Pleasure.
There were a couple of takeaways for me here. First is that I guess in every industry we see around us, there's disruption. And the key question for businesses and for leaders is, how do I stay relevant given what's happening around me? No easy answers, but I really liked what Atul said about not resting on the past laurels and treating each new day as a new fight. One of my professors at London Business School, Linda Grattan, in her book 100 Year Life, says that earlier if you knew somebody's age, you knew their stage of career. Life was quite predictable. But that's not the case anymore, given the pace of disruption in the digital world we live in. The second takeaway was that given the explosion in marketplaces and gig economy and flattening of the world, there's an explosion in supply of services around the world. If you're in any business or a profession, the future prospects of being an average, middle-of-the-road Joe are quite bleak, as a tsunami of supply and automation hits each industry. It's arguably super critical for each one of us to find a niche where we have a distinct edge, where we have passion, where there's market opportunity, and go after it. I believe the era of coasting along which was a decent survival strategy in the past, might be over. I hope you found the conversation purposeful. I look forward to having you at one of the subsequent conversations of the Play to Potential podcast series. To listen to some of the other nuggets or conversations, please visit playtopotential.com. Bye now.